It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go on a beautiful, beautiful Trumptanic Tuesday afternoon, off and running for this ninth day of June, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That's where we gather every evening when this program is live from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific, all times in between, and all the great globe round. For the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza in the Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. Hop right in, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you never have before, and you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and House of Roberts and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky down in California to his south, and more as the program continues. You're mighty welcome, and we have a fine time in there, and it's just a great way to augment your live listening experience. If you're listening to the podcast, we're not there. But nonetheless, you'll probably hear interactions from the chat room, just not in real time. HeadOn.live is also the best place to go for all of your podcasting needs. That's easily done. And of course, it's all HeadOn.live is the focal point for keeping the program on the air. Month by month by month for more than 16 years. And that's where you go if you'd like to be a subscriber. Thanks to Mary Bell for re-upping this evening. Thank you very, very kindly. And, Bill, we find ourselves at a $465 fundraising goal for the evening. Thank you very kindly for knocking it down a little bit more between the last program and this one. Every program here at The Horn begins with thanks, and so gratitude goes out to the following, our ninth day of the month subscribers. My God, we're roaring through June, aren't we? Yeah, we are. But nonetheless, these are some lovely, lovely days. I got to tell you, it's... if you go to the chat room, you will, of course, be moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. I think the studio air conditioner may be trying to fold space to get the hell out of here. The fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion are south-facing with lots of glass. And consequently, it's 85 degrees in here. Yeah, it's naked radio. Oh, yeah. It's 85 degrees in here. Naked radio. Summer has arrived ahead of the first day thereof. And consequently, it is rather uncomfortable in here. But anyway, thanks going out, like I said, to Mary Bell. Thank you to Khalil. And thank you to Ralphs, and thanks to James. Thank you all most kindly for helping keep the program on the air. And it's $165 to take care of what we needed to raise yesterday. And it'll be $200 for this evening. Just trying to keep up and keep the bills paid. Somehow we've managed, and I can never thank you enough to keep the bills paid during the worst economic crisis that has happened during the time in which this program has been on the air, including the Great Recession of 2000. Well, it began in 2008 because George W. Bush's chickens came home to roost a little bit early. He was hoping to be out of office so that he could blame whoever came next, and that, of course, is what the Republicans did. Sparky says it's 90 degrees in the man cave, but it's a dry heat. Hey, it's dry-ish here, but nonetheless, just gauging by my own what my own body is telling me, it's still plenty hot. Because I'm pinking up real good, being outside, futzing around with the new acorn. Oh, and program note. I will probably have to take a couple of breaks during the program this evening. One in about 24 minutes. And another, that's true, Steve in New York pointing out, ovens are dry heat. I'll go and because see the ribs I tested the new acorn on butts and it worked fabulously, and all that barbecue is now gone, save for a little bit of the pulled pork salad that I invented yesterday. I made the aforementioned pulled pork salad tacos, a little bit of cool chopped tomato and a little lettuce, and no, I left the lettuce off. And some shredded mozzarella, and they were well received. But the pulled pork's gone, and so I had ribs in the brine in the 11 secret herbs and spices. It was probably more like 17, and put them on about 1:30 this afternoon because it had to happen. And then I realized, hey, that means they're probably going to be done about 5:30. So I checked them about 15 minutes before the program started, and they're done, but they're not quite perfect because there are a couple of signs you want to see. You want to see the meat really pulling back from the bone, and when you pick them up with tongs, they should bend a little bit, but not fall apart. That's one of the myths. Myth? Yes? That's one of the myths about ribs, is that they should fall off the bone. They should not fall off the bone. If they fall off the bone, you're doing it wrong. There should be some chew to them, some mouthfeel, it should be more like tender steak, not halfway to goop. And so they're there, but they're not there. So I'm probably going to knock off at about 5:30. I don't mean quit. It will go to the Green News Report or something at 5:30 or so. I'll go out and check them. If they're done, then I'll be a little bit longer because I'll have to wrap them and rest them, you know, aluminum foil, all of that stuff. But if they're not done, then we pop back out I don't take them off, me and that mouse in my pocket. I don't take them off. I leave them there for another half hour or so, and then check them again. Frankly, I'm anxious to try them. I have a rib problem. As you can tell, I'm powerless over barbecue, and my life has become unmanageable. Yeah. So that's the program note, such as it is. thanks for letting me know. 5x5. We're getting the stream out nicely. So it is Trump-tanic Tuesday, And we have, I got Trump-tanic stories out the gazoo. But there's one that bears, it's not a case of Trump-tanic intellect or anything, but it deserves mentioning simply because the gravity with which the words were authored or offered. The New York Times had a story earlier this afternoon based upon a pre-recorded statement that Dr. Anthony Fauci provided for an appearance before the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. In that news story, the Times writes, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, delivered a grim assessment of the devastation wrought around the world by the virus, describing COVID-19 on Tuesday, today, as his worst nightmare, a new, highly contagious respiratory infection that causes a significant rate of illness and death. In a period of 4 months, it has devastated the whole world, and it isn't over yet. Sort of a pointed note to the assholes, I mean Republicans, I mean maggots, who keep saying, it's just a bad flu. No, it isn't. The Times continuing, his discussion with a moderator was conducted remotely and videotaped for conference participants. Although Dr. Fauci said he had known that an outbreak like this could occur, one aspect surprised him, how rapidly it just took over the planet. An efficiently transmitted disease can spread worldwide in 6 months or a year, but this took about a month. We're going to come back to that "this took about a month" thing. And he pointed out that that means that this virus has a higher degree of contagiousness, which I guess is a better word than contagiousity. Or contagity. Contagiousness. And that it traveled the world because it was taken around the world by infected people. As I noted on the program yesterday, New Zealand has proudly announced, and congratulations to them, that they're about to be COVID-free. But it's going to require continued diligence to stay that way. But New Zealanders don't wet themselves over not being able to go bowling or get a haircut, apparently, or get their nails did, and instead went about the business of trying to protect their people and their country, because the land and the people are one, for those familiar with the Arthurian legend. And they even marched in support of Black Lives Matter through, was it Wellington? Huge march. And it was inspiring to see, but they did so in a socially responsible manner. And so hopefully it will turn out to be true that they do become COVID-free, but they will be the only country that is. The New York Times story continued and said, Dr. Fauci said that he had spent much of his career studying HIV and that the disease it caused was really simple compared to what's going on with COVID-19. And that made me stop for a minute. Dig it. HIV is a comparatively really simple virus compared to what COVID-19 is doing to people. And when you think about the horror inflicted on this planet by HIV, then if that's what a simple virus does, then oh my Jesus. The differences, Dr. Fauci went on to say, include the fact that there's a broad range of severity to COVID-19. Everything from having the virus and having no symptoms at all, to having the virus and getting critically ill and dying, to lung damage, to intense immune responses, to clotting disorders that have caused strokes in people who shouldn't be having strokes, you know, the young, and then an entirely separate inflammatory syndrome that causes severe illness in some children. And this is without reference to even COVID toe. This is a bad, bad, bad disease. But by all means, maggot governors, encourage people to go to the fucking beach, you goddamn morons. Jesus. And so the upshot of what Dr. Fauci was saying is that it ain't done here. It ain't done with the rest of the world. There is more to come. And apparently, some people in this country are kind of itching for it. And being the paranoid person that I am, although I'm not quite up to par with, say, Alex Jones, I fully expect that maggot states will do everything in their power to suppress knowledge of what this damn thing is doing. As noted in yesterday's program, Texas is going up in two separate factors that should preclude the second phase of reopening, but Greg Abbott doesn't dare do that because that might give Donald Trump a sad. And on a secondary level, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are neck and neck in the latest polling in Texas. And what's more, John Cornholio may be in trouble. And that's a big deal. Texas's primary, except for Super Tuesday, isn't until next month. Which means that, well, like I said yesterday, talking about Charles Booker of Kentucky, who is picking up some steam in his race, his primary challenge against Amy McGrath in Kentucky. He's an African-American man from Louisville. And his policy proposals are far more progressive than those of Amy McGrath. Well, so too, the presumptive nominee in Texas, has been assumed to be MJ Hager. However, there is another candidate who may bring a better fight to John Cornholio. And that is Texas State Senator Royce West. And I thought it might be helpful. This is unpaid ad placement. It's not really an ad. This is just me sharing a piece of information that's out there in Texas right now. Royce West is taking Let's not put it that way. I don't want a visit from the humorless dudes in the black suits with the skinny black ties. He's taking Donald Trump head on. He wants to run. He wants to be the nominee for Senate in Texas and run against John Cornholio, but he also wants to hang Donald Trump around John Cornholio's neck like an albatross. An ugly, noxious, venomous, ignorant, stupid albatross.
I'm Royce West. This is a message for Donald Trump. I've spent 26 years fighting for change in Texas. Now I'm ready to take our fight to Washington. And I will not let Trump stand in our way. I fought against voter ID so all our votes are counted. Stood with Wendy Davis to protect a woman's right to choose. Opened the first public university in Dallas. And expanded access to jobs and health care. We need an experienced leader to stand up to Trump. That's why I'm running for the United States Senate.
How about that? Between COVID-19... and the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and more, this has become a decidedly fluid political situation. and nothing is over until the last vote is counted. Primary day here in West Virginia. Made my choices. And it'll be a while now before we find out what the results are, because mail-in ballots will not be counted until the canvass, which is 5 days after today. So that'll be, well, I have my hopes. And it was a pretty busy ballot. Three Supreme Court seats up, a battle to see who will face off against crazy cat lady Carol Miller, who has more dollars than sense and says that she prays to Jeebus before every vote in the Congress, and somehow or another, Jeebus always tells her to vote like Kevin McCarthy tells her to. I think she may be mistaking Kevin McCarthy for Jeebus. Yeah, anyway. Going back to COVID-19, though, for a moment. You know how we're all the time talking about how this program is so far out in front of the curve that it's like being on straight road? Here we are again. If you look over your shoulder, you can't even see the curve in the road. We're so far out in front of it. An article that Chris in Germany sent along to me from a news aggregator called Euronews, citing new research from Harvard Medical School. Maybe that, you know, I'm awfully hard on Harvard and have been for a while. But for the most part, it seems like Harvard's problems mostly stem from their really, really horrible school of business and their awful law school. I mean, consider. They had Alan Dershowitz on the faculty for a long time. Enough said, the Harvard Law School. And of course, just about everything wrong with the with economics today in the United States can be traced either to the Harvard School of Business or the University of Chicago School of Economics. But there's a new batch of research out from the Harvard Medical School. Some inquisitive researchers there decided to take a look at search engine queries from China, in particular from Wuhan, and to look at, curious as it may seem, satellite images of parking lots at hospitals in Wuhan. They had 110 satellite images to examine from six hospitals in Wuhan that stretched from January 2018 to April 2020. That's 16 months by my ciphering. And then they had daily data from search engines for people searching words like cough and diarrhea from the Chinese search engine Baidu, going all the way back from to April 2017 up to May 2020. Data is a funny thing. It will sometimes tell you things that people or governments or agencies or organizations aren't telling us outright. And language from the Harvard report says that increased hospital traffic and symptom search data in Wuhan preceded the documented start of the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic in December 2019. Well, we already knew that because we took the fact that the Pentagon and the White House, but not the Congress, were warned by the Defense Intelligence Agency's Medical Intelligence Division. And the language that was used, that it was sometime in mid to late November, we isolated that to somewhere between the 16th and the 26th of November 2019, which correlates, interestingly, I'll just for the purposes of review, correlates, interestingly, with the November 19th sudden trip by viral Vespasian to Walter Reed Hospital in a hastily arranged convoy, when usually he would just go over on Marine One. Well, here's what the Harvard researchers found. There was a steep increase in hospital occupancy as measured by the parking lot volume, first observed in, wait for it, August 2019. And in extrapolating ideas on information transmission, here on this program, we talked about the possibility that this thing may have been running around China as early as August, September, October, certainly October, probably September, maybe August. And so there's steep parking lot traffic in Wuhan in those six hospital parking lots beginning in August 2019. And that traffic peaked in December 2019. Also, via the aforementioned Baidu government-monitored, government-censored search engine, August also saw, again, language from the report, a unique increase in searches for diarrhea, which was neither seen in previous flu seasons or mirrored in the cough search data. But they also looked at cough search data. And they saw what they would expect to see with the onset of seasonal flu. But diarrhea, not so much. Yes, that's the second reference to diarrhea, maybe the third. And my apologies to those dining in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And the diarrhea search data only shows up with the current pandemic. There are things that make data like this less than optimally reliable. But the authors of the study say, while we cannot confirm if the increased volume was directly related to the new virus, our evidence supports other recent work showing that emergence happened before identification of the Huanan seafood market. These findings also corroborate the hypothesis that the virus emerged naturally in southern China and was potentially already circulating at the time of the Wuhan cluster, and also hint at the missed early signals of COVID-19 in current surveillance systems for respiratory pathogens. Let's hear that again. These findings also corroborate the hypothesis that the virus emerged naturally in southern China. Naturally. Not from a lab, Alex Jones. Tom Cotton, you fucking moron. But naturally. And so the official total is 406,000 people worldwide having died from COVID-19. But I think anybody of any repute would tell you that that number is most likely improperly low. Raups recalls something that I said a while back, and that is, if you can point to a festival that gets people out and around each other a lot, especially with a lot of close bodily contact, you might just find the triggering event that set this thing off. And so, because RALPS quite frequently serves as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, she just sent me this. Guess what happened in August 2019? It's something called the Double Seventh Festival. It doesn't sound particularly romantic, but it is, according to what RALPS has been able to find, the Chinese version of what we think of Valentine's Day being. And it happens in August. Damn. I really may have to take that frayed purple robe with the tattered applique moons and stars on it and "Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby" written in glow in the dark paint across the front of it, out to the seamstress or the tailor, and just get it spiffed up a little bit. Holy smokes! Thanks, RALPS. Lee advising me, subject line, curve in the road. Stop it, Bob. You keep telling us that you're ahead of the curve. Just keep both hands on the wheel. There's less road traffic. Hey, no, I'm an old hand, Lee. I can, old knee, really. I can navigate minor curves in the road with nothing but my left knee. You know, if I have to have two hands handy for rolling things and whatnot, like once upon a time in my misspent youth. Further information on the Double Seventh Festival, the Qi Shi Festival, fell on August the 7th, 2019. It'll fall on August 25th this year. It's also Young Girls Festival, in which young girls pray for skillful hands for sewing. But there's no real holiday for it. But it's the Double Seventh Festival because it falls on the seventh day of the seventh lunar month. Also known as Qi Qiao Festival, Ingenuity Begging Festival, because of a beautiful legend of someone named Niu Lang and Jinu. It is said to be terribly, terribly, terribly romantic. And it has to do with a kind-hearted cowboy who had no living parents and was maltreated by his brother and brother-in-law whom he lived with. Having been driven from his home, an old man, and a lot of old men in this kind of these kinds of stories, turn out to be gods who quietly wander the earth. Yoalia Hikot comes to mind in Mexica mythology, the god Nightwind. But the old god guided Niu Lang to the sick cattle, whom he nursed back to health. And one of the work with me here. And one of the recuperated cattle, as an act of kindness and reciprocity and appreciation, magically introduced Niu Lang to Jinu, who happened to be a fairy from heaven. And they fell in love, and apparently fairies and humans can get it on. And they lived a happy life, and Niu Lang farmed the field while Jinu wove at home. And they were magically given a boy and girl. Magically. That kind of goes back to the whole story of Christmas thing where, no, Joseph, really, an angel appeared to me. And, I mean, that's why with the baby bump. But there's a potential disease spreading festival. Of course, there's nothing festive about the ongoing civil fury over the ongoing penchant of American law enforcement to murder people of color. But that it's going to prove to be a disease spreader, too. We're on countdown. We're on countdown to COVID right now. I mean, and not just because of that, but also because of whiny, pissing and moaning, spoiled children types in maggot states who just had to go to the beach on Memorial Day. It ain't Memorial Day unless we can remember our war dead while we's at the beach drinking Corona beer. Yeah, this is not a good time to think that it's over, because it's anything but. Utah, interestingly, is having a hell of a spike right now. Just like Texas is spiking. Just like the disease is proceeding in Georgia, where people were forced to go out in person to vote in their primary today. Because, well, Brian Kemp. And beginning this morning, the reports began flooding in that people in Georgia were having the devil's own time trying to exercise the franchise. Long lines, machines not working, all over Atlanta, curiously enough, which is about as blue as Georgia gets, it was proven damn near impossible to vote. How about that? Who could have imagined that a guy, Brian Kemp, who became governor of Georgia because as Secretary of State, he purged people of color from the voter rolls and suppressed those he couldn't purge, that somehow or another, with him as governor, the simple act of voting turned out to be a labor of freaking Hercules. Yeah, I know. Difficult to fathom, to say the very least. Oh. I guess there's not a Chinese festival for it, but there is that, and it's maybe apocryphal. There is that alleged old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. The level of interestingness that we're experiencing is approaching escape velocity. Oh, and by the way, it's not like I'm surprised by this, but McClatchy has a story, and Sparky hipped me to it, in which they inquired of the National Guard, the D.C. National Guard, about the guard troops who were deployed to respond to peaceful protests in D.C. Well, Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Brooke Davis, the spokeswoman for the D.C. National Guard, said, "We can confirm that we have had COVID-19 positive tests with the D.C. National Guard. The safety and security of our personnel is always a concern, especially in light of the COVID-19 era, but it wasn't enough of a concern to keep the D.C. National Guard out of the streets." Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air Force National Guard Lieutenant Colonel Brooke Davis, on the other hand, wouldn't say how many members of the D.C. National Guard have the Rona. All guardsmen who are suspected to be at high risk of infection or have tested positive for COVID-19 during demobilization will not be released from Title 32 orders until risk of infection or illness has passed. Members of the Air and Army National Guard with no or low risk of exposure who present symptoms of infection 1 to 14 days after release from orders will contact their unit. Well, good. I'm glad they're going to contact their unit. Are they going to quarantine Lieutenant Colonel? Interviewed by WTOP, Dr. Anthony Fauci said, it's a difficult situation. We have the right to peaceably demonstrate, and the demonstrators are exercising that right. It's important to exercise your constitutional rights to be able to demonstrate, but it's a delicate balance because the reasons for demonstrating are valid, and yet the demonstration itself puts one at additional risk. I wonder how many of the tens of thousands, if not millions, of Americans who took to the streets and continue to take to the streets are part of the tens of millions of Americans who are uninsured, who, if they get the Rona, are fucked. I wonder. And I don't think it's improper to wonder and to feel a creeping sense of horror and of dread. Oh, and since this is the COVID-19 portion of the program, and since I've already mentioned the overgrown, whiny-ass babies, let's go to Fresno. No, let's don't and say we didn't. But a little less than a week ago, a member of the Fresno City Council Gary Breedfeld, I don't know, decided to call the Wambulance and said that fellow council member Miguel Arias was bullying him because good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gunmetalist, homosexual, Christian council member Gary Breedfeld, council member Arias made him uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was horrible. Just horrible. Because the Fresno City Council passed a resolution to mandate the wearing of masks. And Breedfeld whined that council member Arias had put the resolution to mandate mask wearing on the agenda. It was just the latest example of a pattern for him that includes bullying, abusive, belligerent, and bullying behavior. It was really bad bullying because he said bullying twice. And because that wasn't enough whining, there's no way this guy isn't a maggot. I feel uncomfortable with the mask physically. There's the differing data that shows that wearing a mask, number one, well, it doesn't matter if you're urinating or not, councilman. Wearing a mask, number one, doesn't prevent the COVID-19. I know, wrong accent, but you get the idea. I think that it's clear that it's not definitively true that if you wear a mask, it definitely protects you. Now, this is Gary Breedfeld being either deliberately obtuse or simply displaying the fact that he's dumber than a handful of hammer handles. I feel uncomfortable with the mask physically. Well, I wonder if you'd be even more uncomfortable if you get the Rona, you goddamn maggot. Because, of course, nobody out there is saying that wearing a mask prevents the Rona. Not at all. It is a simple matter of saying that when you wear a mask, you protect others against any viral particles you might be shedding. Because you might be asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. And if you're symptomatic, you ought not be out in public. Yeah, oh well. But Fresno City Council member Gary Bruderfield, oh God, wear no mask. It's in the Constitution right there next to where it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, Republicans are all the time saying they got these family values and how they care about people, and they got them some compassionate conservatism. But all you got to do is ask them to wear a mask to keep from giving other people the Rona. We can't do that. It's uncomfortable. And so over and over again, according to the Fresno Bee, Bruderfield said multiple times before the meeting that he won't be intimidated and won't wear a mask. Well, good. Don't come to the meeting, dickhead. Don't vote. Resign. For my own personal decision, I just don't feel the need to wear a mask. People have said very different things, and they've been all over the map on masks. No, they haven't been all over the map, dickhead. You wear a mask, as Councilmember Mike Carbasi put it, to show compassion and make other people feel comfortable around one. So reporters asked, are there any circumstances when you'd agree to wear a mask? And, well, I'm not going to answer that. That's hyper-pathetical. It violates my rights. It's in the Constitution. MAGA. And this is one of those things that just... I don't know. Maybe he needs to call in some of those refugees from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention to stand around him with AR-15s. If you see a virus, you shoot it, okay? Because Second Amendment's in the Constitution. Fucking idiot. Goddamn moron. But not the only one. A survey out from the Centers for Disease Control indicates that 33% of Americans, curiously, a number for all intents and purposes identical to the number of people who still think that Donald Trump is going to make America great again. 33% of Americans admit in a survey that they have used bleach or other household disinfectants in non-recommended high-risk practices because they were hoping to stop the Rona. Mm-hmm. The CDC reporting the results of their survey that these Trump-tanic intellects, these maggots, have used bleach on food products, have applied household cleaning and disinfectant products to skin. Remember the story of the parent spraying down their child with Lysol? They've inhaled or ingested cleaners and disinfectants? Sure. Because back when Clorox Claudius said,
and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute. Is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets in the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. Sounds interesting to me.
Now, when the sane and normal and decent people heard that, they went, Huh. The President of the United States is out of his itsy, bitsy, teensy, weensy, tiny little mind. Well, one-third of America said, hey, yeah, pass the peas. And pass me that Clorox spray. I bet it'll taste great. Oh, the stupid is strong with the Trump supporters. Strong indeed. It goes on and on and on. Check in on the mail real quick. Suman writes to let us know, same thing in Arizona, Bob. Our ICU utilization is 80%, trending to 100% and more. Meanwhile, our governor, Doug Douchebag, refuses to wear a mask. When asked, he said he has one. Maybe he's protecting it safely up his ass. Well, no, it's holding in the black light butt plug that Donald Trump sent him, Suman. The stupid is strong with them, says Scott. Ass hattery, dipshittery, dumb fuckery, and nut bucketry. It's what America's come to. P.S. The COVID-19 spike in Utah. How's that magic underwear working out for you? Yeah, apparently it doesn't do any more for COVID-related diarrhea than plain old BVDs or Fruit of the Looms. That's our fourth diarrhea reference of the first hour of the program. Dinner's done in the Eastern time zone. Irish Dave says, as a city father of Fresno, the raisin capital of the world, is this really sour grapes? I wonder if the grapes from which raisins are derived, I wonder if they start out sour and only get sweet because the sugars have been concentrated in the drying process. The world wonders. It was downtown Auckland. Thank you, Flavio. In front of the U.S. consulate. And they even performed haka in front of it. Bless them. Billable Rick complaining, Bob, stop ruining my late lunch. Because the dinner hour, the beginning of the program, is also late lunch in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone. Jesus, I'm probably ruining breakfast for Ken out in Hawaii. Oh, thanks to Jeremy for getting us started this evening. Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you to Todd, South Carolina Stan, for jumping in. We are, let's see, that takes us down to 450 to go to get caught up with this week. Thank you both very kindly. Meanwhile, Billable Rick, Bob, stop telling us how fairies can get it on with humans. Prove it. Mm-mm, not even with yours, bub. And then, stop it, Bob, says Lee. Stop counting the number of diarrhea references. Can't help it. As to the Clorox spray on the sugar snap peas, Randy in PA says, the Rona, it's what's for dinner. You've just come home from a hard day of... I'm not even gonna. Socially responsible asks Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, what does that mean, Bob, asking for 62 million of my countrymates? Oh, okay. Our buddy John in PA, clearing up a misstatement I made last night in my conversation with Lady B. Bob, would you please set the record straight on something? It was me who said Lady B has a beautiful voice, not Scary Jerry. Consider that correction made. Also, I fell victim to the same type of disinformation you were referring to last night about what's going on. Our biker Biff guy from Maryland is not and never was a cop. And the kids he assaulted were actually 18. Please talk about the Orange Tyrant's tweet today about the elderly gentleman from Buffalo. Oh, God, I hope to get to it. I do hope to. because, well, I mean, that thing that inhabits the White House actually accused Mr. Gugino, who was bowled over by thug cops in Buffalo, such that you could actually, in the video, hear his skull crack on the pavement, because he was tall and 75. Yeah, Geezer Disgustus tweeted that he was probably a member of Antifa. I wish I was kidding. And then, he was retweeted. Once again, there's no basement, there's no bottom to his slime and his filth. As to Alan Dershowitz, Albert in Rhode Island says he's not 100% evil. Well, maybe he wasn't once. He's won cases against the FBI concerning files they opened on people for the most frivolous reasons. Yeah, he did. And even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. And Kyle suggests, to be fair, it's only a concern when the police and military forces get the coronavirus. And besides, the protesters probably intentionally gave it to them, don't you know? Yeah. Jesus fucking Christ, he continues, I'm so fucking tired of these stupid-ass whiny white men bitching about how tyranny has come because they ain't got no right, and they ain't got no right to make themselves sick, and ignoring police fucking murdering black people in cold blood, Jesus Christ. I hate these people, he says. Kyle, wait, people are eating bleach? Scott's right. We're all screwed, Bob. Paul says, I got some stickers to send you. What's the P.O. box address? It's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 2581. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Look forward to the stickers. And let me say again, thanks to all of you who maintain subscriptions via the U.S. Postal Service. Thanks to folks like Brandon in Brooklyn. And thank you to Dennis in Ohio. Thanks to Irish Dave. Thanks to a wonderful package to our buddy Dave Number 11. I got the most wonderfully fragrant package of dried mushrooms that Dave had foraged himself, and they're exquisite. Thanks also to George in California, who sent along a DVD he's had lying about of the early years of the Midnight Special. I can't wait to sit down and watch that. That's going to be a blast. And there was nothing to tell me who sent it, but thanks very kindly for the copy of the new Steve Earle and the Dukes album, Ghosts of West Virginia. Glad I've listened to it digitally, but it's awfully nice to have a physical hard copy of it out on New West Records. Thank you. Let's see, we're down to 440. Thanks to our buddy Anatole. Thank you. And Steve in New York points out Mr. Gugino, the 75-year-old man who was bowled over by police because he was in a conspiracy with George Soros to deliberately make the police look bad by letting them knock him down and cracking his own skull. Steve in New York reminds us that Clorox Claudius got his information from Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. Onan is a network for people who think that Fox is just full of a bunch of sissy liberals. Yeah. Jesus. So I said I was going to knock off at the half at the 30-minute mark at the beginning of the program. I've now filibobstered an hour away. And I do need to take a moment and go out and check the ribs, because I want them to be wonderful, and I don't want them to be all dried out and pathetic. If you'll be so kind to indulge me, we'll go to the Green News Report after one more COVID update. I said that the Rona is spiking like crazy in Utah. Former Republican Governor John Huntsman of Utah, according to the Salt Lake Tribune, got incorrect test results for his Rona status. He's running to be governor of Utah again, and four members of his campaign staff have already tested positive for the virus. He tweeted, received a call from Salt Lake Health saying they had given me wrong results. Still awaiting my results from COVID-19 test last Friday. No word on family members either. Very illuminating to see the process firsthand. Illuminating. That's what we're calling it. The county health department arranged the tests for the Huntsman family, who apparently had no problem getting tested, according to Abby Huntsman, his daughter. And they told him that the negative result that he got was actually from a test he had last month when he really was negative. She said the family thought the negative report on Monday was weird because they didn't have any of our other results done. We all did it together, and he was negative, which I also thought was weird because he had some symptoms. Oh, for pity's sakes. Abby said, we've all had symptoms, so we just assume that we'll probably all be positive. But until you get a positive test, it's just crazy anxiety that you build up. And, you know, that's if you are wealthy, white, and Mormon. Right? Being very careful. Thank you, Randy. Randy says, beware, Bob. My great-grandpa died of poisoned foraged mushrooms. I will be careful indeed. Irish Dave can't resist. So that would be the new improved Rice-A-Rona, not the San Francisco treat. Onan also said that 75-year-old Mr. Gugino was on his way to catch the Antifa bus to... Yeah, Klamath Falls. Okay, so let's do the Green News Report. I'll be back. Stand by. Hopefully I'll have happy news to report.
It's Tuesday, June 9, 2020.
We're not out of the woods on COVID-19 yet. Hurricane season started last week, and boom, you know, we have the storm.
Buckle up. Tropical depression Cristobal's impacts are not over yet.
Footage released by the Russian Investigative Committee suggests the sheer volume of the spillage overwhelmed the concrete levees intended to contain minor leaks.
Melting permafrost causes catastrophic oil spill in Russian Siberia. May 2020, the hottest May on record. Plus, Trump uses pandemic to justify new rollbacks of public health protections.
Of course he does. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So April was global pandemic. May is massive nationwide protests over systemic racism. I assume
June is a plague of locusts, then in July, pleated pants are coming back.
Actually, we already had a plague of locusts in June, but pleated pants? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know if it's Cristobal, but it's having an impact across the U.S. right now.
Indeed. Tropical storm Cristobal made landfall near Grand Isle, Louisiana on Sunday, bringing torrential rains, flooding, and power outages. But now the flood threat is not over. Remnants of Cristobal could cause serious inland flooding as it heads up the Mississippi River Valley, where just a few weeks ago, torrential rains caused two dams to collapse in Michigan.
Uh-oh.
Cristobal already broke the record for being the earliest in the Atlantic hurricane season for a third named system to form. If Cristobal remains a tropical depression when it crosses into Wisconsin, it would also break another record as being the first tropical depression ever recorded in Wisconsin. Hmm. So buckle up. It ain't over yet.
No, it ain't. And we're what, 5 seconds into storm season this year?
Yep. May 2020 was the hottest May ever recorded since record-keeping began in 1880. That's according to Europe's climate reporting service Copernicus. NASA and NOAA are expected to reach similar findings in coming weeks. The new hottest ever May record means that 2020 is on track to be one of the top two hottest years ever recorded. June is also likely to be among the hottest, with officials across the country now scrambling to adapt emergency cooling centers to protect residents from the double threats of extreme heat and the coronavirus.
Mm. Why didn't you warn us about this extreme heat coming our way, Desi?
I believe I did.
Oh.
Man-made global warming is undermining infrastructure in the Arctic. Melting permafrost caused a giant fuel tank to collapse in Russia's Arctic Circle, causing a 135-square-mile oil spill along a major river and nearly all of its tributaries, which officials say could take decades to recover.
So the permafrost just gave way because of the heat, and then the entire tank, which was resting on the permafrost, collapsed?
Yes.
Oy.
Russian President Vladimir Putin declared a state of emergency and sharply rebuked regional officials for not announcing the spill for 2 days. In the Arctic, roads and even entire cities have been built on permafrost that is now melting.
What could possibly go wrong?
Meanwhile, here in the U.S., while the country is focused on massive civil rights protests against police brutality and the global pandemic, the Trump administration is striking new blows against the environment and public health with a number of major rollbacks. On Friday, President Trump reopened a protected marine sanctuary off the coast of New England to commercial fishing. Established by the Obama administration in 2016, the whole point of the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts Marine National Monument was to allow endangered right whales and other critical overfished marine species a chance to recover. Trump late last week also enacted sweeping new rollbacks of public health protections, directing federal agencies to use the Coronavirus National Emergency Declaration as an excuse to waive long-standing environmental laws in order to ram through federal permits for new mines, pipelines, and other projects.
Of course, shock doctrine politics.
Trump recently blocked communities from having a say over polluting projects built in their neighborhoods and moved to block states and tribes from vetoing pipelines and other projects that could pollute their waterways.
Is it November 3rd yet?
No. And the Trump Environmental Protection Agency also last week proposed monumental changes in how the agency crafts rules for air pollution limits under the Clean Air Act in order to hamstring future administrations from attempting to curtail toxic pollutants. This new rule change blocks the agency from considering any public health benefits when calculating the cost benefit of new regulations. Last month, the Trump EPA rolled back a rule on mercury pollution from coal plants by disallowing public health co-benefits. Now, the new proposal would expand that to all new Clean Air Act regulations to make it appear that pollution standards are just too costly to industry to not poison Americans.
But another administration can come in and roll back the rollbacks, can they not?
They can, but it is very difficult now and would probably have to go through a very long litigation process.
Of course. For much more on all of these delightful stories and more, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
success. Ferg and I took them off the grill. They are perfect. And wrapped them in foil because you want to let them rest for a little bit. And then once the program's over, or perhaps slightly before, we're going to tie into those suckers. Anyway, going back to email, James in Illinois says, I think we're all either pro-fascism or anti-fascism. I get it that not all of us are either willing or able to go out and put our bodies on the gears of the machine, as Mario Savio put it. But unless we want to one day wake up and find that it's already too late to stop another bloody civil war, we better do what we can to help. I'm Antifa, and it's no secret. It was in my raisin. I was raised to admire the people who fought global fascism, and I never got any lessons about global fascism being any different if it happened to turn out to be carrying a Bible and waving a flag, an American flag. Yeah, he did. John pointing out, Trump put Mr. Gugino's life in jeopardy today. Yeah, he's not... take a number. How many other people has he tried to get the maggots to take their Second Amendment remedies to? Dave, number 11, writing... the bill to the patient, the BioFire coronavirus analysis runs about $250 a test. The bill to the patient penciled out at $8,000 for the test, which is a bit more than I speculated. The health system tabled the BioFire in favor of their new high-volume Panther and adds, nice your listeners are looking out. Take your time. Check out what I sent. Contact someone in the local mycological society and let them have a look. They aren't going to go bad. They're delightfully dried mushrooms. Happy you got them. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so very much. And thank you for the Donald Fagan EP cover. It's up in the studio. Here we are in the second hour of the program. 440 to go to knock things down. 140 to finish. No. Yeah. 100. No. We got 40 to go to finish last week. There, I'm figuring it out. No. No, I'm still in. We had 100 finishing from it. And so we were at 300, and we got down to 290. Yeah, so we got 40 to go to finish last week, 200 for yesterday, and 200 for today. So, yeah, that's where we are. It's a matter of me trying to keep up. It's not easy. And now I have been bewitched by the smell of hickory smoked ribs. It's bad, I'm telling you. Bad. Oh, and the by the way, the person who retweeted COVID Caligula's attack on Mr. Gugino in Buffalo. Yeah, that was Republican National Committee spokesperson Liz Harrington. She retweeted him, and then she scrubbed her tweet. But, well, too many people already had a screenshot. Antifa provocateur. And I would think that Mr. Gugino might have a cause of action against Onan for what they said about him. She said, there has been vandalism, there have been fires set, there have been stores broken into and looted. According to what was reported to me, that individual was a key major instigator of people engaging in those activities. Here's some hoping somebody will lawyer up and help Mr. Gugino lawyer up and sue Elizabeth Harrington for every cent she's got. The actual tweet coming from Viral Vespasian.
Buffalo protester shoved by police could be an Antifa provocateur. 75-year-old Martin Gugino, he
mentions him by name,
was pushed away after appearing to scan police communications in order to black out the equipment at Onan. I watched. He fell harder than was pushed. Was aiming scanner. Could be a setup.
Oh, for yeah, that's a setup, all right. Mm-hmm. Here, I'm going to crack my own skull and get myself put in intensive care, you know, to own the maggots. No, that's the maggots that do things that are that stupid. You know, pay $750 for an ice chest and then blow it up with Tannerite because they stopped having a commercial affiliation with the National Ruble Association. Lady B wants to know more about the cover. It is the front and back of Donald Fagan's IGY, with the opposite side being walk between the raindrops. It's the sleeve, and the front of the sleeve is the cover from the Nightfly. And the lyrics to IGY are printed on the back. Standing tough under stars and stripes, we can tell this dream's in sight. You've got to admit it at this point in time that it's clear. The future looks bright. Hanging in a place of honor. Right here in the studio. And Kyle says, fuck you, Donald Trump, all caps. Fuck Trump! Okay? You really can't say that enough these days. Oh, I didn't even know that. Flavio says, you forgot to mention that one of the announcers on Onan also works for Sputnik, and he participated in this report that Trump tweeted. Well, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. And I mentioned early on that John Cornholio is polling for shit. His approval rating is 37%. His disapproval is 36%. In a desperate attempt, to make it look like Republicans give something like a fuck about what's been going on, John Cornholio has joined with Tim Scott of South Carolina to introduce a GOP police reform bill. Somehow or another, though, he only got around to doing that after his poll numbers went in the toilet. I know, it's probably cynical of me to think that that would be a motivating factor, but, well, I guess I'm just a cynical guy. As far as the Buffalo PD is concerned, it's not just them. A police dispatcher has been suspended in Buffalo after he referred to protesters as wild animals. Mm-hmm. WFBO-TV had the report. Civilian employee dispatcher Bob Marth was suspended by Buffalo Police Commissioner Byron Lockwood when it got out that he had said the quiet part out loud, posting on Facebook, "Enough is enough. What's going on is uncalled for. Fucking wild animals. And what do you do to an animal that's rabid out of control? You take it out. Mayor, stop being a patsy to these fucks and give the order. Allow the officers to shoot to kill." God almighty. He's been suspended without pay. An internal investigation's been opened. You'd think that that would somehow be maybe a firing offense, but apparently not. But this guy's a full-on authoritarian prick, because he also has a history of praising Hong Kong police for using blue dye water cannons to blast protesters there. And along the way, made clear that there were other people he could shame besides the city of Buffalo. He said he was a security guard for Allied Universal, Chase Investigations, and Shays Performing Arts Center. That's what you want at the annual Christmas performance of the Nutcracker. Some nut job in the lobby hollering, "Shoot to kill!" And, of course, we all know that the two police officers who were suspended without pay after they shoved Martin Gugino, you know, they came out after they were arraigned and had a whole bunch of other cops there applauding them. The same thing happened with a police supervisor in Philadelphia charged with a crime out of the police riots. Cops standing outside to applaud him, too. Yeah, fire those bastards, too. Kyle asking, why does everything with Trump always connect back to Russia? Well, the easy answer to that, Kyle, is because Vladimir Putin owns his orange ass. His orange adipose ass. That's why. They've owned him for years. Recall that Rudy Giuliani became famous as a prosecutor for prosecuting the Italian mob. And the minute the Italian mob was taken down a peg, guess who jumped in to fill that vacuum? Yep. And who went swanning around Ukraine looking for dirt on Joe and Hunter Biden with the assistance of Russians? Well, yes, that's also Rudy Giuliani. Well, thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Appreciate it. I'm sorry you're having troubles. The easiest way to kick in is just to go to headon.live and use the interface on the main page there. Lee in New York, sunshiny optimist that he is, says we do have to to thank Trump for all that mounting space he gave to Black Lives Matter signs, images, etc., all around the White House. Of course, Trump did not intend that use. He had his wall around the executive mansion erected to protect him while he hides in his bunker. I'd guess that POTUS is not a thumbsucker. He'd have to take it away from his tweet generator. True enough. Worth a little jingle. You did see one of the names for his fence that has now fenced in Lafayette Park. Tiny Man Square. Yeah. And people have done with his stupid fence what people in West Berlin did with the Berlin Wall. They turned it into a protest art space. Not very sharp, this bunch. Not at all. Yeah, I did. I did. Steve in New York pointing that out, was the one who pointed out the Italian mob versus Russian mob in New York City. Steve says, I emailed you about that. You didn't steal that from me, did you? Tisk, tisk, tisk. I did. And now I can remember where I stole it. It's like me forgetting who it was that complimented Lady B's voice. It wasn't Scary Jerry, although I'm sure Scary Jerry would second the motion. That was John in PA. Yeah, Ralph's the ciphering. Oh, the ciphering. It hurts us. It does. And since it is Trump-tanic Tuesday, Brother Deacon Asa put me onto this one. And I'm frankly surprised it hasn't happened in the United States, but no, it happened in Toronto over the weekend. A guy wearing a St. Patrick Patriots hoodie, I do not know who those are, attended a Black Lives Matter rally at Nathan Phillips Square in Toronto over the weekend. I mean, there are even people in this photograph wearing short sleeves and even short pants in far Canada. I jest. But he showed up at Nathan Phillips Square. Wait for it. In blackface. Black hair, blackface. It looks like he used maybe Kingsford charcoal. And he's just grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Protesters confronted him. And he just stood there with that shit-eating grin on his face. Until a Canadian cop bicycled up and said, yeah, you gotta go. And he has since been charged with creating a disturbance. You're really going the extra maggot mile when you manage to get charged with creating a disturbance inside a protest demonstration. Oh, for pity's sakes. We don't have a name for the jackass. But holy smokes. And then there's another batch of stupid to be examined. Oh, where'd it go? Doggone it. Oh, that might be it. Nope. Well, I don't know what I did with it. I had two instances of it. One came from Mike in Cascadia. I had told him it was going to lead Moran Monday, but well, then we got the Morans who wound up leading Moran Monday. But this story comes out of Forks, Washington. And apparently this is a phenomenon that is going around the country in maggot circles. You can file it under, the Antifa is coming, the Antifa is coming. Oh, that's just awful, Brother Deacon. That's just awful. About the Toronto. No, just no. Now, Forks, Washington. And Mike in Cascadia says, the good patriots of Forks, Washington waylaid a multiracial family camping in their bus by cutting down trees and blocking the campground exit road. The patriots believed, oh, there's that word, that the family was Antifa! It all started when a maggot, in nearby Squim, Washington, the proprietor of Fred's Guns, who was probably just trying to sell some guns, got the maggots whipped up into a white, and I do mean white hot frenzy, by a Facebook message from Fred's Guns. Oh, for pity's sakes. Someone could have died quite easily. An individual by the name of Matthew Randazzo tweeted, developing in the tiny remote town of Forks, Washington, locals on Facebook are claiming they blocked the highway out of fear that an incoming bus was an Antifa bus of looters come to burn down the town and then chased and harassed the bus through town while repeatedly talking guns. Under the hashtag ForkStrong. It's just an old school bus. They were literally just camping. Meanwhile, the idiots were not to be deterred. This makes me happy, smiley face. I love our... See, I revert to redneck. I love our locals and feel pretty damn safe. Another individual replied, my locals are making me feel unsafe, saying they want to shoot protesters. And a little blonde girl replied, well, that makes me feel unsafe, too. But so would unfriendly protesters pulling a gun on someone who lives here as soon as they got here. Who, curiously, didn't exist. This was just a multiracial family gone camping. Nonetheless, Abigail the Blonde said, I think part of the problem of exposing who they are is that they're not from here and they came here with intentions. Whether they were to protest or riot, we won't know unless we ask them ourselves. And that's why I understand our town being on edge. We were just starting to move on with the COVID situation. And now, oh, God. Now, this is, as Mike in Cascadia explained to me, all taking place on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State, which is part of the Olympic National Park. And as Mike explains, getting to Forks is an arduous drive through magnificent landscapes. Arduous, since both routes from the north and south are circuitous, narrow, dangerous roads. The last several miles are sobering since the valley that Forks sits in is one giant clear cut. In the 1980s, under Reagan, the level of logging on the peninsula was not sustainable and the devastation is visible to this day. Well, that's the funny thing about that Reagan legacy. It just won't go the hell away. And when the Reagan legacy involves the environment, the Reagan legacy is forever. When logging slowed down in the 1990s, the locals, fueled by the GOP, blamed Clinton and the spotted owl.
Goddamn owl. It ain't in the Constitution. Ain't nothing in the Constitution about an owl got a right to live. Just fetuses.
Longtime New York Times writer Timothy Egan from Seattle said this of Forks. Forks is to the Olympic Peninsula what a butt rash is to Venus. Mike continues and says, one of the wonders of the Olympic Peninsula is the fact that it has the last remaining wilderness coastline in the continental U.S. That coastline is included in Olympic National Park. Over the last half dozen years, I've been privileged to have backpacked that entire coastline in segments. The coast is festooned with sea stacks, archaeological sites, sea life from starfish to orcas, and magical campsites right on the sand. I go with a buddy with a multiracial family as well as others. We have a regular group that includes a bunch of teenagers. We passed through and stopped in Forks every time. Although we've never had an issue, it is obvious the locals resent outsiders. The town has an angry, brooding presence about it. Sounds like Twin Peaks. The people of Forks, again probably similar to your area with the coal mining, were just the kind of aggrieved people that went all in for Trump. And Mike was kind enough to send me some pictures of the area, and it is exquisite. He added that the vampire werewolf novel series Twilight and the subsequent movies were centered in Forks. But they shot it in Vancouver, British Columbia, probably because of the people in Forks, but the town does cater to Twilight fan pilgrimages. And like I said, I had another story from somewhere else of jackasses working themselves into a frothing lather over the Antifa's coming, and they're going to eat our Bibles and make our women folk wear pants. Because they don't even remotely understand what Antifa means. Thank you, Earther, for keeping things going. We are $15 from being done with last week, which is awesome. Thank you, Earther. And maybe we'll get down to only having to fret about yesterday and today. That would be magnificent. Kyle observing, it says, everything you need to know that a certain percentage of people in this country are more scared of people trying to stop fascism from taking hold here and end systemic injustices that have been part of this country forever than they are of the people actually trying to kill in the name of implementing fascism. Yeah. And, of course, this is supported by that persistent thorn in our side, evidence. Enter a pair of researchers, Paul Jupe of Denison University and Ryan Burge of Eastern Illinois University. They put together a little survey toward the end of March of thousands of Americans to ask the respondents what they thought about perceived threats. Oh, God, it hurts to even mention this. Perceived threats posed by Democrats in political office. This has a bit of the flavor of the hockey puck to it. And you're going to see a number or a range of numbers, or here, this is radio after all. You're going to hear a range of numbers that are going to seem strikingly familiar. If Democrats control the government, will Christians lose their religious freedom? 29% of the respondents said, it's in the Constitution. Will a Democratic president force you to pay for abortions? 28%. Yup. Is a Democratic president going to take your guns? 34%. Yeah, they are, but they're going to have to prime from my cold, dead fingers. That abortion business? Joe Biden supports the right to choose. By the way, yes, in the last couple of days, he effectively became the Democratic nominee. But you can't get any more Roman Catholic than what Joe Biden is. But they think, Democrat president going to force you to pay for abortion. But the real Lulu in the list of questions, the one that sends you straight out into the yard, barking and running rabbits and eating dirt, is the 22% of Americans who say that a Democratic president will ban the Bible. The Bible will be banned. Sometimes it's just so damn tiresome. Sometimes it's exhausting. And we're going to, and this is nothing new. I remember, 2008 maybe? When a survey of people in just New Jersey had a 29% response rate saying that Barack Obama might be the Antichrist. Then, of course, as we found out later, it turned out he was the Antichrist, because somebody soaped it onto the back of their car window for Jesus. No, this is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. So maybe this has been a forever thing. I don't know. Maybe part of the reason our country has the problems it has is because 70% of the country, or 66% of the country, is constantly compelled to drag along 30 to 33% of the country that are just scientifically, certifiably fucking stupid. Maybe 66% of the country is walking upright and dragging along 33% of the country that has its hands buried up to the knuckles in the dirt, going grrg, nerbly blaggy, ni babble. Abortions, Magoons. Of course, that self-same 22% of Americans who say that Democratic president is going to get my Bible, that 22% has also never read what's in it. They don't know that it is the single dirtiest book in the entire history of publishing. They don't know about the business about stoning disobedient children or saving the little virgins so they can be raped for God by the priests. They sure don't know about Lot's daughters saying, hey, let's get daddy all liquored up and ride him real good, because we ain't never going to get no husbands now that Sodom and Gomorrah have been roasted. So we might as well fuck daddy and get pregnant by daddy. Ding, 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 ding. Had the banjo been invented in Bronze Age Palestine? I don't know. Big ears, buggy eyes, strange teeth. And the one daughter gets old Lot all liquored up and rides him like a pony. And she comes back and looks at her sister and says, wasn't bad. It's kind of like hummus. When it's good, it's great, and when it's bad, it's still pretty good. So the second daughter goes, and you're my daddy, you're my daddy, you're my daddy, you're my daddy. And then you get to the New Testament, it says, and Lot was a righteous man. How was he? Oh, righteous. But maybe really and for true, this is our curse. It's the opposite of whichever one of those Greek mythological characters was forced to push a rock up a hill till he got it almost to the top, and then it rolled back down and had to do it all over again. Well, instead of the rest of us pushing a rock up a hill, we're dragging a bunch of meth-munching sister-fisters up the hill behind us as they continue to grunt and click and hoot about their guns and their Bible. And every time we think we get to the top of the hill, they'll and do something idiotic like getting all worked up about Donald J. Trump. The J stands for knuckle walker. Ugh. Hey, we're done with last week. Thank you, James, out in Illinois. Thank you very kindly. So now we've just got yesterday and today. That's awesome. I'm terribly sorry. Kyle says, Bob, I'm extremely disappointed in you. Isn't it obvious that in observing the Pride Month, the militant gay Nazis of Antifa are coming to turn every straight person gay? With their, gay rays? I know. The horror. Stephen, New York says, well, if they ban the Bible, what are we going to do about all the giddy-up Bibles in hotel? The giddy-up Bible, that's good. Rolling paper? It's really thin. You ever notice how cheap the paper the Bible's printed on is? Well, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy's awarded me a cowbell. You earned a cowbell for the you're my daddy, you're my daddy, you're my daddy. Priceless. Thank you. Don't blame me. Blame the authors of that damn book. Ah, Sisyphus. Sisyphus and the rock. Because I knew there was another one who got splayed out on a rock and is apparently still spending eternity having some bird peck out his liver. Why his liver? Thank you, Sisyphus. Thank you, Ralphs, as well. Very good. Wait a minute. Randy and PA noting, that Greek god would be a Sisyphister. See, that's why the cowbell's here. Scott in San Diego says, the banjo in Old Testament biblical times? Perhaps it did exist back then, at least in an earlier form. Dueling Lyres by a long-ago ancestor of Eric Weisberg. Anyone? Dueling Lyres. Oh, that's what that's what happens when a pair of Republicans appear on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Ooh. It's been a rough night. Kind of a rough night. For Sparky, the stories just keep coming. And he reminded me of one story that I do have in the list. And it's another start barking and run out into the yard kind of thing. And that would be the fact that it is now being reported that none other than Stephen Miller, father-to-be, Ouch. It has bred. Stephen Miller has been put in charge, according to April Ryan, who recently won the award from the White House Correspondents Association for best reporter in our group. April Ryan has reported that, one, try not to laugh, COVID Caligula is going to deliver a national speech on race relations, which in itself is hilarious and is fraught with peril and will probably set off another frenzy of national civil disgust. I'm sure there'll be a line in there about very fine people, like, you know, the Klansman in Virginia who tried to murder someone with his automobile. That's bad enough. But what's going to send you out into the yard is who's delivering it or who's writing it. Nitwit Nero's going to deliver it. April Ryan tweeted, Stephen Miller, who crafted Trump's immigration policy at the southern border, including separating families and putting children in cages, is preparing a White House speech on race relations. Which is kind of like Goebbels preparing a speech for Hitler on Passover. Might not even be like it. It might be identical to it. Stephen Miller. Holy shit. When Sparky sent that along, he said, you have got to be shitting me, Bob. No. No. Because the rule of thumb for sorting out these doofi, these toxic fascist doofuses, is whatever you can imagine them doing, pull back, look at it again, and imagine it being even worse. For instance, he's got so much credibility with the evangelical crowd. Maybe Mike Pencilneck Geek might be one to tap to answer and give a national address on race. But because he's got it, you know, Jesus loves the little children. You're not Jesus. Get your hand off my kid. But Trump couldn't do that because that would mean that there was a limelight shining on Mike Pence. So instead, he looks to Stephen Miller. And his wife, Frau Goebbels, to come up with something in the way of putting the nation at ease over issues touching upon race. This is the same Stephen Miller whose own uncle said, you know, if Stephen Miller's policies had been United States policy, his own family would have been gassed in the ovens, and he wouldn't even be here. That's Stephen Miller. But I there's no reason to doubt April Ryan. She sources her stuff and gets it right. Right. Maybe Stephen will take his cue from those very fine Klansmen in Fallon, Nevada. Miles Bergen of KRNV videoed a march in a Black Lives Matter demonstration in Fallon, Nevada. And a couple of dudes show up in Klan hoods. But here's the operative thing. One of them is carrying a Trump flag. And they got to where the protesters were and tried to keep marching. A cop actually confronts the pair of freaks. And they were wearing the pointy Klan hats, dunce caps, and kept them from disturbing the peace. Where's Derek Chauvin to kneel on somebody's neck when you need him? But no, the police just said, hey guys, look, we realize that you're very fine people, but why don't you go away from here before these nonviolent protesters say something to you that might hurt your feelings? Could you do that for us, guys? Hey, that's great. Have a blessed day, okay? No gas. No rubber bullets. No pepper balls. Just, hey, I know you're having a spaghetti supper down to the down to the clavern and everything, but take a hike, will you? And take it not around here. And they were wearing masks. There was a time in this country where there were anti-masking laws specifically relating to the Klan. Back when Klan 1.0 got suppressed. In what, the 1870s? Yeah. Yeah, we'd hate to kneel on your neck or anything. Also coming out of Nevada. Yeah, oh, wait a minute. That's very good, Brother Deacon. Brother Deacon Asa asking, Stephen Miller's writing a speech on race relations? What? John C. Calhoun wasn't available? That old devil. No, he's still busy being dead. Breaking news this evening, John C. Calhoun is still dead. Now, another story out of Nevada. Updated today, right-wing blatherskate Wayne Allen Root had set up a Blue Lives Matter march. Let's remember, blue lives are not a race or an ethnicity, it's just a damn job. And probably as many, and if you want to talk about jobs being dangerous, probably as many or more construction workers die in any given year than police do. But Wayne Allen Root was going to join up with Las Vegas City Councilwoman and Mayor Pro Tem Michelle Fiore in a Blue Lives Matter march. Other members of the Vegas City Council, Victoria Seaman and Stavros Anthony, had also said they were going to the Blue Lives Matter march. They were billing it as the biggest pro-police march in the country. We aren't against anyone. We are for America, and we are showing our love and support for our police. But Wayne Allen Root has announced that No, the march planned for June 13th in Las Vegas has been postponed, he said. Police asked me to postpone until emotions cooled down. Eh, I got a feeling emotions are not going to be cooled down whenever that happens. Nor should they. Real piece of work is Michelle Fiore. Told you it was going to be a busy evening. Where's that other one? I'm looking for, oh, there she is. Michelle Fiore. Things keep getting worser and worser for her. According to the Nevada Independent, Michelle Fiore has managed to get her foot in her mouth again. This past Saturday, speaking to 250 people at the Clark County Republican Convention, she was reported to have remarked, "If there's a job opening and my white ass is more qualified than somebody's black ass, then my white ass should get the job." Funny thing about all this is it was actually reported by an African-American conservative activist named Niger Innes. Also at the event in Clark County on Saturday, she declared, "White Lives Matter," and then said, "And Hispanic Lives Matter, and Asian Lives Matter, and Black Lives Matter, all lives matter." Michelle Fiore, who doesn't have the truth in her, denies having made the remark. "No, I don't. Absolutely wrong and inaccurate. Please do not text my personal cell with rubbish." She is, of course, an RNC committee woman, while the Clark County Republican Party is going to, well, I mean, I guess. I never heard of her. Who? The joke of the day coming from David in South Carolina, Stan. Georgia Secretary of State has called on Governor Brian Kemp to investigate voting issues in today's elections. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, he'll investigate. Why didn't we I'm investigating. Why didn't we suppress more votes? How come them lines was so long? Why was anybody in them lines at all? Jesus. Well, you're getting the bet in early, and I wouldn't counter it. I wouldn't bet against you, David, in South Carolina, Stan, adding, I bet there will be for-profit media people who call Donald Trump's race relations speech presidential. Who knows? There might even be a little bonus for Van Jones if he says that. He's got a history of saying things like, tonight Donald Trump became presidential. Well, I'm afraid I may have sent Ron and Raleigh out the door running rabbits and eating dirt. Writing a speech on race? Good Lord, Stephen Miller. So the Obergruppenfuhrer is going to treat us to his view of race relations in the U.S. If nothing else, it'll be enlightening. There's only two ways to go with the complete truth, this complete truth or complete bullshit, and either way, we'll know which one it is. I would not put any money at all on complete truth. No matter how badly he'd like to just unburden himself of how he really feels. Daddy was a Klansman. We don't have one around here, but apparently CrossFit is a big deal. It's a fitness regime, and it's made oodles and oodles of money for its CEO and founder, Greg Glassman. He was on a call between himself and 16 affiliate owners. And he said he was having a hard time figuring out just how to feel about the police murder of George Floyd. The call went on for 75 long minutes on Zoom, and somebody dropped the dime to BuzzFeed with it. And it all started back when the coronavirus shutdown came on, and the CrossFit empire was trying to maintain contact and help its affiliates figure out how to stay afloat during the shutdown. And various CrossFit owners were invited to check in on the Zoom calls on an ad hoc basis. So the 16 that were on it weren't particularly special. It was just luck of the draw, I guess, or unluck. And so on the call, Greg Glassman can be heard saying, "We're not mourning for George Floyd. I don't think me or any of my staff are. Can you tell me why I should mourn for him? Other than it's the white thing to do. Other than that, give me another reason." But that wasn't the end of it. He went on to say that George Floyd was murdered to silence him because he was part of a counterfeiting conspiracy. He said, "It's very interesting that George gets popped with counterfeits, and who comes but the head of security from the dance club? Watch, this thing's going to turn into first-degree murder. That's what it's going to turn into. And it's going to be because I'm predicting this. We have friends in the FBI in your neighborhood, and they're of the view that this was first-degree murder, and it was to silence him over the counterfeit money. That's the belief. That's what the cops think." Anybody go to CrossFit? Because if you do, Bob, stop telling us not go to CrossFit. That was preemptive. But that in turn reminds me of something that has bothered me all along. First it was a hot check, and then it was a counterfeit 20. And I've seen very little reporting. No, I've seen precisely zero reporting getting a reaction on this particular aspect. Someone dropped the dime on George Floyd. That much is true. Derek Chauvin, the training officer for the three other cops that helped kill George Floyd, was not on the roving counterfeit interdiction squad of the Minneapolis Police Department. They were called to the scene. And they were called to the scene because someone at the store, having identified, they thought, a counterfeit $20 bill, picked up the phone and called the cops and says, this guy just passed us a counterfeit $20 bill. What a hell on earth it would be to be that human being. Because for the past 2 weeks now, every night that person goes to sleep, they have to think about the fact that they were directly and proximately responsible for the summary execution of a human being, an American citizen, by a death squad. What a horror. What was it, do you suppose, that led that person to pick up the phone and make that call? Was it because if that counterfeit 20 showed up in their drawer at the end of the counting, at the end of their shift, that they'd get docked 20 bucks by Cub Foods or who the hell ever for having a counterfeit 20 in their drawer? Because if the grocery store turned in a counterfeit 20, the bank would refuse to honor it and Cub Foods would be out of 20 bucks. And we've got people in our community who are who work in grocery retail. Are you given expert level training on how to spot a counterfeit 20? Around here, at least, the only time they get out the special magic marker is if it's a 50 or a 100. And then who makes the call? I'm pretty sure that it's not the checker. Does the checker say to call the manager over and say, I think I got a bogus 20? And they say, well, who gave it to you? And that black guy. I think we need to know, and maybe at some point we will, like maybe during the trial, I think we need to know what that process was. Somebody started a snowball heading downhill that turned into death. And if you were that person, wouldn't you be furious? Wouldn't you find the press and say, hey, this wasn't what we wanted to happen. This is just what we were told to do by the bank if we got a counterfeit 20. And now I feel like I had a hand in something that caused a national outrage. Four cops murdered a man in cold blood over an alleged counterfeit 20. What if it was just a really rumpled 20? What if it had been two or three cycles through the washing machine and a couple in the dryer? I don't have the answers to these questions, but it's been bothering me for about as long as I've known about the case. Because this was not the police acting sua sponte, although they tried to pretend that it was. Derek Chauvin did not have a X-ray counterfeit vision. This just, there's always more to a story than meets the eye. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I stressed?
No, it's just the stress line. Name.
This is Rich. This is Richard in Tennessee.
Hey, Richard. You know, it's named for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. You remember Mr. Stress?
I sure do. I've been remembering all kinds of people. Hang on for a sec. Let me turn down this loudspeaker here. Oh, boy, I'm trying to turn up the phone. I'll go to another room.
Okay.
My computer is not cooperating. It won't turn off the sound.
Linux?
Yes, Linux, indeed, indeed. I was helped a lot by Bill in Pennsylvania.
Oh wow, wonderful! We have a fantastic community here.
You helped with that. I called up and said I needed some help with Linux. Can anybody help Richard? And so he did, and spent many, many hours with me on the phone, helping me debug my system.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Now, I've been wondering about some of our old-time callers I haven't heard in recent years, you know. We had a woman in Columbia City, Oregon.
Yeah. I haven't heard from Susan in a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, people find the community when they need it, and they drop away when they don't. No rhyme or reason to it.
I guess so. Yeah, whatever happened to Gunny Bob?
Don't know.
Yeah. Well, so here I am. Here I am in Tennessee.
But you're still here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here. I've been meaning to call, but there's I just have never gotten used to the changed hours of the program.
You're in Eastern Time too, though, so it. It's just a matter of going back. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I used to be in California.
Right.
And
big difference between being 3 hours early. Yeah.
Well, I had to get out of there because of the high cost of living. My landlord wanted his house back after 21 years.
Right.
So, and it was impossible to remain. So, Here I am in Tennessee, where things are very, very different, and I have an interesting problem with a neighbor across the street.
Oh no!
When I moved here 4 years ago, he was flying a big Confederate battle flag out in front of his house.
Well, it is Southeast Tennessee.
Yeah, and he's turned into the best neighbor I have ever had. Now, he does not know that I am a Jewish atheist.
Yeah, that might change things.
You know, but he comes over here and he mows my grass for me once a week. And a couple of years ago when I had heart surgery, he was getting up and driving me to the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like I said, fantastic neighbor. And he is a former U.S. Marine and retired from work at one of the auto parts factories here in town. And his son is a cop. And so every once in a while, and he talks to me about various ethnic minorities, and he makes digs about them. And he has an anti-Obama slogan on his car.
Of course.
And his son is a cop. You know? And then every once in a while, he shows some sign of hope. And here I'm caught in this paradox with this person. So he'll say something to me like, oh, I had my car washed at the Mexican place downtown. I said, yeah, they're Mexican. He'd say, but they do a very good job. And he goes out with his wife to the Mexican restaurant here in town. It's a very good place. And you know, they have
good place to eat. Yeah.
There. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we were talking about haircuts one day, and he said, "Where do you get your haircut?" I said, "I go to the Black Barber across the street from this other haircutting place." He said, "Oh, yeah, I went in there, too. I got a haircut from him." He said, "I like the man."
And he said it with a little bit of a tone of surprise in his voice.
Well, honestly, you know, it's like I have a goal. It's like I want to bring this boy around. And I don't know quite how I'm going to manage to do it. I have absolutely no idea. Is it possible?
I don't think it can become a project. I think you keep just living your decent life and let him maybe, and then maybe just ease into things here and there and let him have something to ponder, as he's, you know, brushing his teeth at night after having gone to the Mexican restaurant. Just, you know, nothing big, just little things. But what you're describing is a, and this is by no way of apology, it's just reality. It is the inherent dichotomy of the South. And
very paradoxical.
It is. And you know, I live it here. You know, you can have fantastic conversations. You can have, salt of the earth interactions with a guy who goes to work the next morning and poisons communities for a living. And he has absolutely compartmentalized the awful things he does away from whatever he thinks the decency of the person he is.
Well, it's a strange experience for me, you know.
Well, I would imagine. I mean, you've been there for a while, but you're probably still experiencing some degree of culture shock, Richard.
Well, I am. You know, it's like I've been told that I will never be accepted here. Because I'm an outsider.
No, you ain't from around here. I mean,
that's right. I'm not.
When the time comes, and may it be far, far in the future, if they stick you in the dirt there, they'll put your name and your date of birth and the date you left, and then on the little bronze plaque, they'll put "he weren't from around here."
Well, I'll tell you some interesting experiences. You can tell, it seems like the longer I live here, the more like my New York roots come through my speech. My New York accent gets stronger,
Oddly enough, I was thinking that they might be rubbing off a little bit on you down there. Because you don't sound as much as you used to.
Well, it's, what can I say? I got my degrees in Connecticut, so I worked in radio for a while.
And so
I lived in California for 40 years.
Yeah, and so you learned a little bit of that broadcast standard. Or more than a little bit.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I was in classical music radio, which is not like other kinds of radio. And I don't consider that I was in conventional radio because of that. So, but yes, I did change my way of speaking. But here, it's becoming more entrenched. And you know a little bit, I think, about my background in public health care.
Yes.
okay? And here it's like every man for himself, you know, the doctor's role in private enterprise. Pretty much all Republicans, and they have billboards extolling their virtues. And I'm not used to that. I was getting my health care in California from America's first public HMO.
Right.
Which was a great success and still is. And so I'm used to that. And here I found myself the closest thing, which is a community clinic, a rural community clinic. And I'm assuming you guys have them in West Virginia, don't you?
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah.
But okay, a number
of them have fallen by the wayside or been absorbed by the massive West Virginia University system because they just had a hard time staying alive. We had when I needed to go to the doctor, I went 2 miles down the road. Now I go 20 miles because the hospital that was running it gave up on it because they just couldn't. It's not that they weren't making any money. They were losing too much. And then the hospital that was running it and dumped it turned around and themselves got assimilated by WVU Medicine.
So how does that work out?
How do you mean?
Well, if WVU Medicine takes it over, does your health care get better or does it get worse or
what? They seem to run a tighter ship. They're all about paperless documentation, and there's a nurse that comes in, and she charts everything on a laptop. And the first few times after they put this system in, the nurse was, you know, grumbling under her breath. And then the doctor comes in and asks you questions and looks at the laptop while he's asking you questions and types in your answers. But, you know, the appointment structure and everything is really tight. The prices of, you know, I'm private pay, so the prices have gone up. My 5 minutes in an examining room used to be $90. It's $120 now.
Oh, boy. No. How are you doing that?
I'm holding up as best I can. Trying to, you know, in these uncertain times, I'm, you know, trying really hard not to get the Rona. So Agnes and I have appointments in July. I don't know yet whether we're going to go. I don't know if they want us to be there. I know I'm probably not, it's not going to be gone by July, and I'm probably not going to I'm not going to be comfortable. It's a great place to go. You know, and this is any hospital. A hospital is a terrible place to get, to be sick, and a really good place to get sick.
Yes, right. Well, there's a lot of dead people here where I live.
Tennessee is still having a horrible time with COVID. When it's so bad that the governor of Kentucky says, if you live in Kentucky and you got friends or relatives in Tennessee, don't go, because your ass is going to be quarantined. When your ass is going to be quarantined the minute you get back across the line. That says something.
It does. Well, I've been on Medicare for a while.
And right.
Medicare has their own rules and regulations and ways they pay for things. And in some ways it's wonderful and in some ways it's terrible. I had heart surgery in 2018, and I'm covered for 20 days in the nursing home. And I live alone. So if I came home after the heart surgery and had to take care of myself, I would have been in bad shape. So I set everything up in advance so that I could go to a nursing home for my 20 days after the operation. And my neighbor drove me all around and drove me to the nursing home here. I had the surgery in Knoxville, went right to the nursing home and spent 20 days there. And everything was fine. I learned something about how nursing homes run. And, well, I've been out of there for over a year. Most of the dead people in this town from coronavirus were at that nursing home.
Well, nursing homes are between nursing homes and churches, that's where it's thrived.
Yeah. Well, 14 people died here in my county, and most of them probably at that nursing home. It's the same company that owns it, that owns that place in Oregon, I think it was.
Washington.
Where all those people died.
Washington, yeah.
Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea that the company was that big. My neighbor is not wearing a face mask. He believes Trump when Trump says everything's fine and everything's all hunky-dory. And he told me that he went out with the missus to the Mexican place. I am not letting this man in my house. Even though
not right now, no.
Favors. Not right now. That's exactly right. people are wearing masks in the stores, but I'm just noticing that fewer of them are.
I get funny looks for wearing a mask.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm eccentric.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
Yes.
Because they don't understand fundamentally that the mask is to protect them, because there is no way of knowing if you are asymptomatically or pre-symptomatically shedding particles. The only way to stop that is with a mask. Otherwise, just by virtue of human speech, you're spewing them 6 feet. God forbid you sneeze or cough or yell.
Right, right. Well, the stores seem to be doing a good job of helping their employees protect themselves around here.
That's because lawyers.
Oh, I see.
So even at the local Wally World, they insist that all of their associates wear a mask, but that only applies while they're on the clock. Walking in there the other day, there were four or five associates, I guess, who had been on break, and they were walking around with their mask in their hand. And they were not going to put that damn thing on until the last minute when they walked through the door.
Is the state doing testing where you live?
Not very well. I mean, if I drive over to the little hospital that got assimilated by WVU, there's a big sign in a white, white sandwich board, red letters, no visitors until further notice. And then it says, and then there's another sign that says ER this way, testing that way. And I think they test between 10 and 4. But nobody wants to get tested, Richard. You know, our dear friend Robert in Australia sent me back the happy news yesterday that his test results came back. He doesn't have it. He's good. And I was so happy to read that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, when you've got an un- or underinsured population like we have in West Virginia, bearing in mind that we have expanded Medicaid, okay?
Yes.
But unless you've got some sort of employer-provided Cadillac plan, the stuff that's on the Affordable Care Act marketplace is a laughing stock.
I know that.
I did all the research. $1,400 a month, and that's the subsidized cost to me. So they're actually getting like $3,600 a month through the federal government, plus me. $1,400 a month gets me a $10,000 deductible. And if I go into the hospital, it costs me $1,500 a day to be in the hospital.
Oh, my God.
And they have the nerve. They have, that's one of their gold plans. And they have the nerve to call that insurance. You know, co-pays for a specialist visit, $45. No or next to no pharmaceutical coverage. And so when you got when you've got people with coverage like that, they're not likely to get tested because they're scared to death that if they get tested, somebody's going to make them go to the hospital. And then they're ruined forever. And they figure, and if they got it, they figure, well, it's going to kill me, so I'll just die at home.
I can understand that. I really can.
Well, I can understand it, but it's a moral abomination.
I know. And unfortunately, that came in under Obama, you know.
Well, it didn't. It did, but it didn't. It came in under Obama, but the Republicans worked hammer and tongs to make sure that whatever plans were in the marketplace sucked.
Yeah,
they're the ones that went after Medicare funding, and of course they're the ones that the maggot Confederate states. Well, you know, if we got that Medicaid expansion, we won't be free. If poor folk can go to the doctor when they sick. You live in one such state.
Yes, I know. Well, you know, I was in California on the board of the HMO. There were 11 companies that qualified to offer the Affordable Care Act in California. There were only 11 companies that qualified under the state to offer Obamacare. Ours was one of them. And we're a small HMO. I say small, having 177,000 members. California counties are very large. This is a county-only plan. So we had 177,000 people in it, most of them on Medicaid. And they chose us because we made them happy. And that's why I chose it. I mean, I was a retail customer of this health plan originally. They had the best rating of all the HMOs in the whole San Francisco Bay Area, the rating coming from their own patients. So it was a slam dunk for me to join this for my own coverage and for my son. And so the opportunity came for me to be on the board of directors as a commissioner, and I, you know, went into that joyfully.
Thereby proving that it is possible.
We took the profit motive out of healthcare is what we did. Only I shouldn't say we, because I wasn't there when this thing started. It started about 45 years ago or so. And some doctor in Contra Costa County got the idea that we could take better care of the Medicaid population if we had them in under an umbrella. instead of paying fee for service to individual doctors who resented having to do it. And that's how the whole thing started. So it was a great success. And somebody got the idea of offering it to county employees. The government employees in California have health coverage. I guess they do in a lot of other places too. And typically, a government employee will have a choice of three different health plans. In our county, Contra Costa County, it was offered to them for a penny a month, so it was called the penny plan. That was their premium.
Amazing.
And so that was a success, and it grew and grew and grew, and they wound up, I think they have now 7 clinics in the county and 1 hospital. So this was such a success that they thought, hey, why don't we just offer it to the general public? So they did. And that's where I came in. I was riding on BART one day, and I saw a poster at the end of the car that said, what is the best kept secret in Contra Costa County? It was an ad for the health plan. And that's why I joined.
So why couldn't that work in Knoxville, Tennessee? Why couldn't that work in
It'll
Nashville?
Work anywhere. It'll work in Charleston, West Virginia. It'll work anywhere. The thing is, you have to have doctors who believe in it. So it's hard to get it off
so
the
were
the
so in, with that plan, Richard, were the doctors who were in it, were they all like Che Guevara doctors who were spending half their time chopping sugar cane in the fields and you know, lived in a tin roofed shack and hiked to work every morning and took hickory nuts in exchange for an appendectomy?
No. Well, I have to say, when I first came in,
I mean, I'm being sarcastic, but you get my point.
Oh, I do. No, of course they weren't. I mean, the older people, sometimes I call them horse doctors, you know, guys out of the military. Some of them were doctors I didn't like. Although there are a lot more doctors I didn't like in Kaiser. When I was a city employee, I worked for the city of San Francisco for 7 years, and I had Kaiser, and they were terrible. I won't get into that now, but I mean, we did a much better job on the county level. And these guys they retired, and they were replaced in a lot of cases by younger doctors who were principled, you know, and they had a sense of public service, and having some people in the waiting room who didn't smell good didn't turn them off. And I was talking, I had a neurologist who left a very high paying job to work there. And he was working for a drug company. And you figure a doctor working for a drug company is going to make big bucks, right? He came to work for Contra Costa County because he believed in doing this kind of medicine. We had nurses who came over from Kaiser to work for us. And they loved working there. They loved working for the Contra Costa Health Plan. Actually, it's Contra Costa Health Services. The health plan is like the financial umbrella over it. And they would come back to work after they retired as volunteers. Do you believe that?
Out there, yes. And that's not to say that there aren't people with good intentions in places like Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi. But they're marching uphill with one foot in a bucket, Richard. Because you take something like what you're describing, and it would be near to impossible to make it work at scale like y'all did in Contra Costa County. Because it would generate open hostility. You'd have doctors marching, protesting in front of the clinic, saying, oh, they're violating our capitalism.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing. I'm going to a community clinic in the next county. So I have to drive 45 minutes to get there. There's doctors all over this place where I live now. But I'm going to the only community clinic that's in this general region. And it looks good. People love working there, you know. Because one of the things that I like to do, any place I go, I ask people, do you like working here? How do you like your job? And I learn a lot. People talk to me. And everybody loves working for this community clinic. I volunteered to be on the board, though. And they wouldn't even call me back. You ain't from around here, right?
Well, you know, you might spread some of those California ideas. But when I was going to the community clinic 2 miles from here, as often as not, I'd come back furious because I'd get stuck in an exam room with some sleazy anti-Obama editorial cartoon that had been faxed 15 million times. You know, till the resolution was approaching zero. Or the day that the phlebotomist was taking my my blood sample and just casually informed me that Barack Obama was a Muslim and he's going to make us all be Muslims.
So what do you do when somebody says that?
Oh, in that instance, I said, where did you hear that? She said, my preacher told me so in church. So it's got to be true.
Oh gosh.
In regard to the nasty cartoons, I picked up the phone and I dialed the administrator and I said, next time I'm in there, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see any political anything. I'm not some sort of hard ass. I'm not demanding equal time. I don't want to see a pro Obama cartoon. I want to see no politics. I want to walk into the waiting room and not see Fox. Put the Weather Channel on. Everybody loves the Weather Channel.
And
that crap went away. And then the clinic went away.
Oh, and then the clinic. Oh, boy.
It has since reopened under the aegis of another hospital. But
And this is a for-profit hospital.
Hospitals can't operate. There's no way to run a hospital in West Virginia and run it for profit. Because every healthcare facility in this state is hopelessly dependent upon Medicare and Medicaid.
And we've got here in Tennessee, of course, we do not have expanded Medicaid, and hospitals have been closing. I understand this.
Yeah.
Hospitals were closing in California, by the way. That would probably shock you, but where I was living, in just outside of Richmond, California, we lost our hospitals. We had two hospitals, and the population has been growing and growing and growing, and the hospitals are gone.
Well, I would suspect that hospitals are closing in California for a different reason than they're closing in Alabama.
I really don't know, Bob.
That would be something that you would be more, you would have greater expertise in sorting out than I would. But, for instance, I think about a little hospital in Pickens County, Alabama, shut down right at the beginning of the COVID crisis, and it was the only hospital in the county and the only hospital for an hour and a half to 2 hours without going way over into Mississippi. And it was the only hospital in a county that also had a federal prison. So when that federal prison became a hotbed of COVID, those prisoners were going to have to be transported not down to Carrollton or Aliceville, but Birmingham or somewhere in Mississippi. And we all know what you know, prisons became hotbeds of the virus. And it, and had Alabama accepted the Medicaid expansion, there's reason to believe that that little hospital would probably still be extant. One of the reasons
that's a safe situation here.
One of the reasons that the little hospital that we go to for our clinic is still open is because they took the vast majority of that hospital and turned it into a long care facility for elderly people who are there on Medicaid.
Oh, I see.
You know, they've got a few beds down one wing, and they've got an MRI machine and CT and X-ray and phlebotomy and all of that. They had to close down their birthing suite because doctors kept maiming infants, newborns.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, they do, they got a couple of pretty good surgeons who make a living on colonoscopies and cholecystectomies and things like that. But they're not heart work, you know. I mean, you can go there and get a stress test. And there's a little pediatric clinic that does a decent job. They've got a cardio Summersville. They've got a cardiologist who comes in a couple of days a week who's affiliated with WVU. And they've got an emergency room for when the addicts need to come in and try to convince somebody to give them a script for hydrocodone. And they deal with the garden variety car wrecks and whatnot. They can try to stabilize a heart attack, but then your ass gets helicoptered to Charleston.
So how do the people do in Charleston?
Charleston has a fairly well-respected cardiac center, and they've just dumped a ton of money into a cancer center. But they struggle. They struggle financially. But we have to have a cancer center in southern West Virginia because there's so much cancer because of mountaintop removal.
Oh.
You know, there's a saying down in the southern end of the state, cancer is as common as the cold. Somebody walks up to you and says, so-and-so's sick. The answer is not with what, it's what kind of cancer is it?
Oh, boy.
Because this is a sacrifice zone. Richard, I got to wrap up, but I'm so glad you called. I don't be such a stranger. I love our conversations.
Great. Yeah, let me just finish up on this, if I can have a couple more minutes.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I was paying the same money you were talking about under Medicare, Medicare Advantage plan. I was paying $40 a pop to see a specialist here in Tennessee. That's a lot of money for me. And I've had a couple of doctors here who are just raking it in. Specialists, a couple of guys who have spent like 2 minutes with me for my $40. He's in and out of there, often bragging to an assistant about how he keeps on schedule. And in addition to my $40, he may be getting $300 from Medicare. So, I mean, I see the paperwork. I, you know, everybody on Medicare gets statements every month about the billing and the amount of money that's been paid out. It's all there in black and white. If you're on Medicare, you can just see it. They'll mail it to you every month. And so I figured out that my podiatrist and my gastroenterologist were bringing in about $3,000 an hour. That's obscene.
Good work if you can get it, I guess.
Oh, boy. Well, I got rid of these guys. But later, good to chat with you, Bob.
Good to talk to you, Richard. Stay safe and be well. And you've got common sense enough to not run out and go to the Mexican restaurant and, you know, because freedom. You've got that kind of good sense.
Yeah.
Take care,
well,
Richard.
I hope so. I mean, I'm going to be going to Wally World in a couple of days.
Well, you'll be taking you'll be taking in your life into your hands. You can perform an informal survey and see how many people are wearing masks.
Well, I'll do that. And the thing is, I take a shower when I get home and I put my clothing away for a few days. That's what I do.
Well, that's a good call. Okay. Do you have access to a decent mask?
Yes, I think so.
Good.
Yeah, I found I had three of them when I moved here. So I soak them in alcohol. I still have some alcohol, you know.
Yeah. 70, yeah. As long as it's 75% or above, or 60% or above, I guess.
Well, there's a shortage of isopropyl right now, but that's for another day. Okay. Bye, Bob.
You take care, Richard. Bye now. Hey, you know what? Go to the liquor store. Pure grain alcohol works, too. I haven't seen isopropyl alcohol since God was a baby. But the liquor store gets in. Oh, you know, it used to be that Everclear pure grain alcohol was 200 proof. Now it's 150 proof, but that's enough to work with because it's above the threshold for disinfecting. We'll wrap up with a note from Lady B, subject line neighbors. I have an interesting neighbor. She's 61, and I met her when I moved into my dad's house after his death 7 years ago. She used to be a bartender. Chubby white woman, green eyes, dentures for a smile. Was a bartender, a biker bitch, all of that. Every stereotype you could think of. You know what? We're actually pretty good friends. I go over to her house. We smoke weed. She pours me a shot. She pours me shots. Not the big drinker. And she is a big drinker. But she's not that stupid. Anyway, long story short, I got a call from a friend of mine that I've known for 25 years. She's an extreme liberal. Eats vegan twice a week, only shops at Whole Foods, is a pagan. Again, any liberal stereotype you can attach to her, she'd fit it. We used to do radio together, and I respect her talent as much as she respects mine. But when it comes to politics, she is completely clueless. She votes liberal, didn't vote for Hillary, because you know Bernie. But other than that, no news, no MSNBC, no Bob Kincaid, you get it. Long story short, she had no idea about the riots and why. She had no idea police brutality was so bad. She never asked me, and we didn't discuss it. I knew we didn't have that kind of relationship. My neighbor, on the other hand, voted for Hillary. She can't stand Trump. She watches the news. She really wants to see a change in this world. I love my friend, but it left a sour taste in my mouth. She was truly shocked and surprised at all the police violence and how black people were treated. I encouraged her to at least watch MSNBC. I don't trust CNN. And watch Rachel and Larry because I think they tell wonderful stories. Eventually, I may turn her on to you, but I don't know if she'll do that. She's pretty busy and she does have a child. My neighbor? She asks me informed questions. She watches the news. And she likes watching BET. Loves Tyler Perry. Who doesn't? I guess my point is, sometimes the people you think you know, the ones you think you can read well, are not those people. And then the ones you don't know and think you can read well, they surprise you. I took a chance and was pleasantly surprised. I made a new good friend. And that was a lesson I learned today. We all need to maintain open minds. And this can get better. We just have to keep fighting and believing in goodness. Amen, Lady B. Thanks for that. And so we come to the end of the program. And what a program it's been. Sorry for the interruption. Had to check the ribs. The ribs have been resting for about an hour now, and I have a feeling we're going to dive into them like a duck on a June bug. I'll try to take a couple of pictures before that happens. I'm engaged in a philosophical debate within myself as to whether to sauce them and slap them on the grill again or just eat them sauceless like a true rib epicure, a gourmand. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind contributions, your a la carte contributions, your subscriptions at Patreon and PayPal and combinations of all the above. Thank you. Thank you to to all of you who share your precious time engaging in the program in whatever means you choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you for all you do. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. It ain't over. Wear your gloves. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Keep social distancing. And if you see somebody in a red hat or a Trump shirt or in any wise maggot appearing coming toward you, avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.